Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Casterbridge podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts.
Ted
let them
Rogers.
Gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on Casterbridge.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo?
Well, you do now.
Good, isn't it?
Tom Baker?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbridge podcast.
Christian, we heard none of that.
Really?
Probably.
Yeah.
What's going on? Well, why has that happened?
Pass.
All right, well, we'll just carry on then. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbridge podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. And with me are James McLean and Brian Turnover. Hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? All right?
Well, I've just woken up, so I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, we should maybe do it earlier more often, and then we get Brian kind of being more sort of vague rather than a sort of Brian Fonzarelli.
Brian Fonzarelli. Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, okay. Maybe we will. Maybe
I'll leave the leather jacket behind.
Yeah, that would make a change. Maybe next time we could get Brian up at like 7 a.m. and do like 4 podcasts and then have a month off.
Oh, God, nice.
That would be good.
would be good, actually.
Let's get him to jump a shark.
He's probably already done that. Now, you know, I was thinking the other day, we don't often have any writers on this podcast very often. I think the last time we had a writer on was Andrew Cartmell. So we've got a writer on today, actually, and he's not alone. So a big welcome to Andy Frankham Allen. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
And to Sean Russell of Candy Jar Books.
Hello.
Hello, Sean. And to Hannah Haysman.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Because now we've got a contrast in voices that we don't usually have on the podcast. Okay, so this kind trio are joining us to discuss the Colonel Lethbridge Stewart book series that's is released this year. We're a lot of Doctor Who fans are extremely excited about this. It takes place after Web of Fear, and it's a new series of books. I think there's 4 or 5 at the moment. And we're gonna find out a bit more about it now anyway. So basically, it's quite busy, this podcast. You'll have noticed, dear listener. There are 6 voices, so we're going to do our best to get everyone to have a say. So we're going to start by... I'm going to ask a general question. I'm going to throw it open and find out exactly how did this whole project come about?
Sean can answer that one because he's a boss.
Well, Andy... had a very to be honest, it's you really. You're,
I know,
it started
but
with
it's
you.
All down to you.
Ah, see. Okay, basically, at the beginning of July, I was rewatching some of Series 7, and it occurred to me that on certain episodes, Mervyn and Henry Lincoln were not getting credited for some of the characters they created, and I thought, hang on, this is not very cool. So I put a little post on Facebook about this because I already knew the grandson of Mervyn Haysman. And I knew for a fact that his sister Hannah here is the executor of Haysman's estate. And I was just like, do you realize that they're using your grandfather's stuff without permission here? You know, what's going on? And then Hannah got in touch with me and it just kind of snowballed from there in like about a week. So yeah, that was fun.
But that wasn't the reason why you sent Hannah to us in the first place.
No, I said Hannah because she's awesome.
No.
Oh, thank you.
It was actually that there was a couple of stories
yes.
that were left over.
Yeah. There was, I'm just trying to think, there was the Great Intelligence, the Yeti, and then there was another one that...
that we will talk about in the future.
Hopefully will happen.
Yeah. the two stories, the Yeti and the Great Intelligence, yeah. They were both adaptations of the original Web of Fear and Abominable Snowman, but with the Doctor and his companions
excised.
Removed.
Right.
And so we saw this and we thought, oh, that's interesting. The problem was it's very, very similar
yeah,
to the
really
original.
It really was just a line for line, just taking the Doctor out, which that's curio, but not much marketability.
Unless there are people out there that want us to put it out there, even on Kindle.
In which case we will.
It shall be done.
Yes, because we're that cool.
So when you say that they removed just mentions of the Doctor, did they have a odd space traveler, or did they just have it be some Earth guy?
On one version, there was Professor Challenger, the Conan Doyle character, and another one was just of an original character. It might as well have been the Doctor, because the lines were pretty much the same.
But it's in some respects, it's a book that the both books. Well, one of them's actually a book aimed at children, and the other book, the other one is a script for a
potential
film.
Yeah.
Of the same story, and the book aimed at children, it's quite literally, you know, sort of,
it's basically Mervyn novelizing a Bottle Snowman, sans the Doctor, Victoria and Jamie,
and set within those sort of confines of 1930s, so famous five, but with the Abominable Snowman in it.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Okay. So with this discovery, that's what sort of spearheaded the whole series, is it? That
well,
discovery.
I had a meeting with Hannah, and she came in. She goes, well, you know, I don't know much about Doctor Who.
No,
if I'm honest.
I will hold my hands up to that. I don't. So,
don't worry. Neither do we.
and I was sitting there, and I went through it, and I thought, well, yeah, they were curio, and I'd be quite interesting to put them out. But did you say that you you had something to do with the Brigadier? And she said, something.
Not kind of really realising the significance at that time of the Brigadier.
And I thought, well, that'd be quite nice to do a Brigadier-focused range of books, or even a book, yeah, or even something. And as soon as I finished the meeting with Hannah...
rang me.
Quickly.
Very, very quickly.
And I said, ah.
We've got the Brigadier. And we just knew without second thought what we had to do. It really wasn't even a discussion then, was it? It's not like, what should we do? We just knew straight away, this is what we've got to do.
And it's interesting because a lot of people out there have said, it's such an obvious idea. Why haven't they done anything after the Web of Fear? Why haven't they filled that gap?
Hmm.
And but it didn't feel very obvious. Well, I suppose it...
Maybe that's why.
It just seems so.
It is the obvious place to do it, because no one's really explored in what 50 years almost. No one's explored those 4 years.
What actually happened to him?
A few hints, but nothing's been detailed about it. So it will be now. Oh yeah.
Okay.
So how does that? How do you deal with the fact that the Brigadier, to a lot of the ways, was a sort of a foil in the sense that he was an establishment to the Doctor's anti-establishment? How does that work when you're having to take the Brigadier into his own context without Doctor Who, essentially?
Surprisingly easily, because he's such a defined character, especially in the early days, you know, Nick Courtney's performance and the way the character's written, it's very defined. It was too easy to do, to be honest. It was just really natural and he's a leading man.
And also, because we have the characters from The Web of Fear, The Abominable Snowman, and The Dominators, the lesser extent, The Dominators, we can, to some extent, recreate that relationship with Travers and Anne and the Brigadier that you have with Doctor and Liz and Joe.
Well, and Sarah. In the second book, for instance, it's very much about Professor Travers and Leffert Stewart, so you're going to probably get a lot of the echo of the Doctor-Brigadier kind of relationship as well. And then, of course, for most of it, it's going to be Anne and Leffert Stewart, so you're going to get the reverse aspect of it. You know, it's going to be like the Brigadier's lead man with Anne as his foil. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to build.
And we sort of see Lethbridge Stewart as an Indiana Jones figure anyway.
Yeah.
Why not?
Gung-ho and let's do it.
So did, you've got David McKinty on board, haven't you? And
yes.
He's done a lot of stuff with UNIT in the past in the books, yeah, as I recall. What did he bring to this?
What did he bring? Experience, knowledge of the character, and a wealth of other material that he personally owns, which gives us all kinds of, you know, things to play.
Very good.
Yes. That's why we got all these authors, really, just because they own certain stuff that we could really make good use of.
No, I think it might be to do with the fact that they might be very good writers, and they
deserve... Well, is that as well?
Does anyone mention the moustache in any of the stories? Does that ever play a key point? Because I think it should, because no one ever mentions that bloody moustache.
You know, there was a line in Forgotten Son right at the beginning that did mention that it looked like it was stuck on, but it needs to go because it's just too knowing. So
yeah.
Yeah, I did try, honest. But that's why I got an editor over me.
That's an interesting thing. Should he have a moustache or shouldn't he?
Mm. We have discussed this. Yeah.
And I think he should, you know, because that's the Brigadier, isn't
it? Well, I still make a point. There's a point in Forgotten somewhere it's mentioned why he's wearing a moustache like he does.
Mm.
So this will make more sense as a character point too, so... Yeah.
Is there a scene in there when he goes into the office and everyone turns around and they're all wearing eye patches?
they turn around, they're wearing moustaches.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, anything's possible. You know, we are fans, so you can imagine there's going to be quite a bit of fanish stuff in there.
But places. Not too much.
No. You know, we're not.
So that is a concern that it doesn't become sort of reflexive to itself.
Would it be too spoilery to ask if? During his adventures toward becoming a Brigadier, there are any instances where he might have some involvement, I guess, not per se, not with the Doctor himself, but like in the aftermath of something that the Doctor just did? Like, yes. Does he cross paths with any stories?
That is a possibility.
Absolutely, yes.
Actually, yeah, it's going to happen, yeah. Okay. I'm trying to be vague, but apparently, yes, it's going to happen.
I think we've already planned a few ideas where that's happening, and we're talking to other people
who own stuff that...
To do other things in the future.
Yeah. There's at least three key ideas that one is a definite, and there's two that are very much strong maybes at the moment. Subject to licensing and usual nonsense.
We're not, despite the fact that I said earlier that we're looking at Web of Fear and Eponymous Snowman and Dominators, even the first four books have elements from other stories
for sure
in there as well. And definitely any book that comes after that, we are looking at doing something. Lots. We believe that, you know, obviously this has to be brand new fiction, you know, aimed at the fan who, you know, who liked the Virgin books, who liked the BBC books.
And loved the novelization.
Yeah. But in the same respect, we are aware that Doctor Who has moved on since then. And there is a lot of other viewers out there that watch the TV series. So, you know, we're making sure that we bring them to it, you know, because obviously with the Brigadier sort of featuring in Doctor Who recently.
Sort of, yes. We'll get to that later.
Okay, now there are...
What about... go on, Christian.
I was just doing my old thing of directing the conversation there. There are so far four books announced, is that correct? There's The Forgotten Son by Andy, Horror of Death's End by Lance Parkin, The Schizoid Earth by David A. McKinty, and Mutually Assured Domination by Nick Walters.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. And what's the release schedule for these at present?
We're going to be launching at the end of February, and then it'll be one a quarter.
Right.
You know, scattered throughout the year at the moment.
Okay. And is it $6.99?
$8.99.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is basically the same as BBC are doing with their stuff.
Yeah, sure.
It's all tied in.
Okay. Brian, you were going to say?
I was just curious what kind of a Brigadier we're going to see in these stories. I know we joked about the mustache and so on, but, you know, he's the Colonel Lethbridge Stewart, I guess I should say, because that's what's in your story. So does he... Well, now it's a two-part question because you brought something else up. But the first one is... does he have some lessons to learn on his way to becoming a Brigadier?
He does. Lots. In fact, nice. The first book is, to some extent, about that.
Yeah.
We want that character... Basically, that gap between the Web of Fear and Invasion, obviously, a lot happens because where he is in Web of Fear and where he is in Invasion is a completely different place, and we want to know how he gets there. And then equally so, when he gets to Spearhead...
Mm.
He's different again.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something that happens to him along that journey.
Yeah, it's the stuff we're dealing with, like, why is he such a private man? Written his entire run until Battlefield, really, we didn't hear much about his personal life beyond the TV show. So gives us a chance to explore why he's actually such a private man, why he keeps his personal life so far away from his military career. So it's, lots of stuff we can explore, and it's going to be kind of interesting.
We're also quite interested is, the other thing that interests us is the fact that he was, in Mordred Undead, a maths teacher.
Yes.
And yet, where did that come from? And perhaps somewhere in that book, the books that we're doing, we're going to explore the idea that he was a maths teacher.
And so it comes from, it actually comes from somewhere, not just suddenly he's a replacement for, say, Ian, for instance.
Yeah, they would never have done that, would they?
No, they'd never replace him with Ian, no.
Ian should have appeared at the very end wearing an eye patch.
I would have paid to see that.
The other part of the question was... James just took it, so now I have to make one up. You guys said you're very conscious of the new series viewers. So, the feel of the books, are they going to feel more like the 60s era stories, or are they going to feel more like the new series, or are you trying to make it a blend kind of both storytelling methods?
Good question.
Or completely something new?
That's like a yes, no, and maybe.
Yeah. it's a tough one.
We do want it to feel like it would fit perfectly into that 1960s Doctor Who.
Yeah, we're trying to convey this whole idea that it's, imagine they'd made a spin-off of Doctor Who in 69 and give it that feel.
But
at
we
the
are.
Same time.
But in some respects, the some of the type of subjects that got covered in the Virgin and BBC books. And perhaps no, so that lost my train of thought then.
Virgin, BBC, Target.
Yeah. Pick up where I've left off.
I never know where he's going. Where were you going?
The BBC. I can't remember now. I was.
It's a really great point, but it may come back to him later.
Sorry.
So does. Does that mean that the relationship between, say, the stuff that McKinty did for BBC Books and Virgin would still relate to your stories? Is there a sort of canonicity there with everything?
There is a follow-through, yes.
There's follow-through, but I guess it's like any Doctor Who medium. The fans can decide where it all fits and if it fits and whatever else. We're not going to make it too set apart. But obviously, we can't be beholden to absolutely everything in stuff beyond TV.
So, do you feel a stronger empathy with Davis and Moffat and John Nathan Turner, etc., from your position now in terms of paternal? Yes.
God, yes. Mm. Yes. Yes. It's quite a scary position to be in, Because we're being watched, and we're going to be questioned. We're going to be questioned so minutely. So, yeah, it's going to be quite a scary ride, but fun, I hope.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Okay. James, have you got anything else you want to ask?
It helps if I put the microphone on.
Welcome to the podcast for the first time, James McLean.
Well done.
I'm glad to be here. Let me just put my eye patch on.
What's put your eye patch on?
Eye patch on, moustache at a ready.
Nope.
We talked earlier about when you said when you started up with Hannah. Yeah. Losing my
still here.
Yeah, I'm losing my train of thought. What you're saying about contacting Hannah over the use of her grandfather's material in the series, how is the relationship with the BBC over that sort of material, Hannah? How does that work? Were they meant to be in better contact with your family?
I mean, the thing is with the BBC, we have had issues in the past, but as long as you keep them up to date with things and your plans, because obviously I own the characters that my grandfather co-created, it's a case of they seem to be fine. They play ball, which is quite nice. It causes a lot less hassle, as it were. But, I mean, if I'm wanting to find out where characters have been used, obviously me not being a massive Who fan, it's usually a message to Andy. And it's like, help. I don't know what I'm on about.
Yeah, she was quite surprised.
I was going to say, Stephen didn't ring you up and sort of say, hi, Hannah. The Brigadier, we're going to cyber-robotize him. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. They'll love it.
I was waiting for that to come up.
And I didn't know, and it was a case of Andy said, you have to watch tonight's episode.
Yeah, I didn't know, but it's just pure coincidence. Yeah. It happened to be the one with the Brigadier kind of came back.
But I got it straight away.
She did. Bless her. You know, she's learning.
I am. Picking up things pretty quickly.
I think the picture on the wall might have given it away.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that that gave it away. It was the salute. That is what gave it away.
Yeah. Did you like it? Because there's some people said they felt it was disrespectful. Other people said they felt it was respectful. And obviously, I do think it was meant to be a respectful nod to the Brigadier. How did you, Hannah, and the rest of you feel about it?
Well, I think it was quite respectful. Mm. I mean, I wouldn't want to see the Brigadier kind of as Cyberman and
we
be
don't want
that
Iron
way
Man
at
Brigadier,
all.
No.
But I think it was done pretty respectfully.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the idea of it more than the continuation of it.
I would have liked him to have said wonderful chat.
Yeah, seriously, in a cyber voice, you know, cybernized Courtney's voice, just splendid chat for all of you, and then shot off to the sky into, you know, eternity, and that would be nice. But yeah,
the idea. Pencilled moustache on the front of the mouth.
And the eye patch.
I have seen lots of other things on the internet saying that Handles is the Brigadier.
Oh, good God.
Oh wow.
Come on.
Yeah. And people have been discussing this across forums and stuff, saying Handles is the Brigadier, and that's why.
And there's no idea here.
Yeah.
didn't he fly into space and blow himself up at the end?
Well, yeah, so maybe the doctor picked up his head and, you know, re-christened him Handles, because that's what the doctor would do.
But they got turned into particles. How's a head going to... That's a terrible theory. I'm sorry, but that's a terrible theory.
It means he's carrying around the Brigadier's head all the time.
I'm sorry, I'm one of the ones that found it disrespectful, to be honest. So, I mean, if somebody wants to turn him into Handles, I think that would be even more so disrespectful. I just think that's awful.
Yet if he had turned round and the whole cyber army had turned round and been wearing eye patches, that would
all would have been
so
forgiven
cool.
then. Yeah, absolutely.
That would have been fantastic.
I'd like to know who else are at Cybermen out there?
Yeah.
You know, we've got an ace
Cyberman.
They're all
destroyed, aren't they, now? Because they did blow up, didn't they?
You know, I suppose it's the ones that are dead characters.
Adrix would be brilliant, because Adrix would be wearing a gold star and would automatically suffocate.
Oh, that would be awesome.
The shortest living Cyberman. Brilliant.
Shortest Cyberman.
Yeah.
You'd be a Cyber Scout.
Oh, very good.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, that was funny.
All right. Now, we've spoken to Hannah briefly, and we've spoken, mentioned your grandfather. But he wasn't the only creator of the Brigadier, was he?
No, indeed.
No.
So there's Henry Lincoln as well. Now, is Henry Lincoln still alive, is that right?
Yes, he is.
Right, and so he's obviously given his approval as well.
Yes. I mean, the good thing about it is that, obviously, because I own the majority of my grandfather's estate, I can do basically what I feel right for his part, as Henry could do if he felt it was right. It's not really a case of, well, you need
approval.
However, we contacted
him, obviously, because it's
he's
the
been
good
extremely busy,
and
bless him, recently, with doing his history tours of Knights Templar. So hopefully I'll be able to touch base with him very soon.
Yeah,
I read some of his books about 10, 15 years ago, not realizing his relationship to Doctor Who until like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, I used to read mad stuff like that all the time, yeah.
No, not that. Not that you read it. That you didn't.
You read stuff.
Henry Lincoln. I suppose I might have.
Yeah, you know, the chances are we've all read stuff of people who related to Doctor Who in some way or another. Because you know, everybody's had a go in Doctor Who in some way. Actors, writers, directors, producers. Everybody's played in that sandbox at some point, I think.
Well,
everybody. Yes. Come on, back me up, guys.
Britney Spears.
Yes, she did Toxic.
Well, she did Toxic, which is the end of the world.
Yep.
All right.
We won. So continue.
Yeah, okay.
Point to Andy. Ahem.
Okay, yeah. So, Brian, are you questioned out, young man?
Offhand, I'm still following the flow. I'm getting more coming to me. I thought we were going to continue chatting. Are we not chatting?
Yeah, no. Well, we can chat if you like. How are you? You all right?
Hey, I'm swell. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks. Thanks for asking.
Great.
I'm swell. Swell from back in 1954, the Fonz.
Yeah. Well, I did say that I woke up early, so I didn't mean, you know, time wise. I meant time zone, time era.
Oh, that's what
Stardust is a bit faulty, you know.
Well, you just wait, because in about 10 years' time, they'll introduce the Brigadier, and then you can join in this conversation.
I can't wait to meet that eye patch.
So, I mean, was it hard sort of trying to make sure that you stayed professional on this, especially, I mean, things like, I'd be very tempted to have a situation where he ends up going to an alien planet that looks like or is called Chroma, you know, that sort of thing. There's sort of, you know, when you love something.
Well, we discussed these things that, you know, he can't go to an alien planet. He just can't, because it would make no sense of what comes later. You know, there's only so far you can push the boundaries in this regard. But
unless you do a Wizard of Oz.
Well, yeah. Anne could, because, you know, we don't know anything about Anne Passmerophia, so she could go to an alien planet.
I suppose there's only so many times you can wipe his memory.
Yeah, and you know, he just happens to forget something or whatever. You've got it's a tough line to walk, but we have discussed pretty much every potential.
I think there's possibly a fear out there amongst fans that we will overstep that mark.
Yeah, we'll overfan it.
Yeah, and we won't. Particularly because we're working with Hannah, we are aware that there is a legacy of Lethbridge Stewart, and we will make sure that is perfectly adhered to.
Yeah.
And also that if we can, on the whole, we'll try to make things fit seamlessly into the series.
Well, this is it. Our only barometer is the TV series.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we don't contradict it in too massive a way, or not at all, ideally, then we're done. We're doing a good job.
However, as Terence Dick says,
continuity is just what you remember.
And if a story comes by that is extraordinary and we have to do something, then, of course, we're not going to turn something down which is extraordinary.
Well, we'll find a way to make it fit.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Or it'll be a dream.
Because that is the fan way, isn't it? Because the fan way will be aware, a fan professional will be aware that things will contradict and you need to put the story first. But if they're fans, they will try and find ways to somehow reconcile it at the same time.
That's their job. If they want to make it all fit everywhere and whatever, and fit to every single novel, fit to every single audio drama, then that's part of being a fan, and we all do it. Well, some of us do.
And I think that
Lance certainly does.
I think the way that Russell T. Davis launched Doctor Who back almost 10 years ago,
When Casterbus began.
Thank you.
I think that was a fantastic way to launch a brand new series because it got to the right audience. Now, we are aware that there are fans out there that have bought the Virgin books, the BBC books. This is where I was going on this thing.
Ah, there we go. We're back.
back in the room.
Edit it together later.
So we're aware that the story is very, very personal to
many fans across many ages. And obviously there are people who've read the Virgin books, read the BBC books, listened to Big Finish and all that, and know what they want. And however, there are also people that have watched the TV series and they sort of expect something slightly different.
Yeah.
And we don't want to let them down, but we don't want to let down the older fans.
We're trying to marry the two.
Marry the two together. Yeah. And it might not be that we do it in every book. It might be that one book is more geared towards the older fan, as in not older person,
long-term fan.
And then we may sort of cast it another way, you know. Put it this way, it's not necessarily guaranteed that the Brigadier is going to be the Brigadier or the Colonel from after the Web of Fear, put it that way.
True. I'm not sure what he means by that, but yeah, I agree.
You do know what I mean.
No, I have no idea.
You do know what I mean by that.
Maybe. I could possibly comment.
I don't know if that's
It was quite cryptic. We'll move on. I just you mentioned mind wipes before. Do you have a limit on mind wipes? Will there be no mind wipes? Memory loss. Memory loss.
Yeah. I'd rather not.
But then, you don't want to do it
because that's almost saying it's a dream.
But
it's,
then
it's a tough one.
It's not like Stephen Moffat to do a reset every now and then, is it?
No,
so
we'd never do it.
If there's an opportunity to get an adversary of the Doctor into a Lethbridge Stewart book, and we would want to use them,
then we
have to wipe the mind of the person at the end of it.
Yeah, because that's a tough one. Because there's certain adversaries that obviously the Brigadier does meet later on in the day. You know, Saigons, the Master, whoever. So he can't really meet them before he meets them, you know? So it's a tough one. But then again, if, say, Robert Banks Stewart came to us and said, oh, I've got this amazing Zygon story that would fit with what you're doing, what do we do? Say no? Of course not. We'd have to find a way to make it work without contradicting Terror. So, you know...
Well, that was an easy one anyway. You just get him turned into a Zygon, don't you?
Yeah. Or you just have to actually know. Yeah. There's loads of ways around it. It just takes a bit of creativity and... You know.
You just get him locked in a room for an entire book.
Well, I'll buy you all a pint if you manage to get the lines, get his mind wiped, then get to use the lines, no, not the mind probe, and I can't stand the confusion in my mind, I think it was, which I think are the most fantastic lines in Doctor Who ever, those. But my actual serious question, a serious, obviously, fan question, which I think people will ask... Unit dates.
Oh, God.
Here
we go. I was asked this last night.
Close your ears, Hannah.
Right. Will we be dealing with it? And the short answer is no.
We're not dating it.
But a more complicated answer is we know when we're set. The authors know when we're set. But we're not going to make it abundantly clear within the context of the books. Although there will probably be clues that people can work out.
But, I think it'd be really obvious. Yeah. I think if we fix it now, then people will be looking at it too much.
Yeah.
However, we do... I think that what the options that we're looking at is what most fans would want.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough one because there's so many theories and none of them quite hold up.
What would any of you want? Let's turn it back to you.
Yeah, come on. Where would you think it should be set, year-wise?
Oh, God, I can't stand the confusion in my mind. Well, I mean, Lance Parkin's book's very good on this because, I mean, as you say, he goes through it very succinctly, even down to, I think, car number plates. And, you know, there is no answer. So I agree with you. I just don't think it's something you bring up. I mean, it's time. Time is the whole point of Doctor Who is time is in flux all the time. Yeah. So does it matter?
But by the same token, he lives in a particular point of time.
But so, however, there is a definite tone. However, there is a tone that you have with Web of Fear, with Spearhead, with the Invasion. Mm. I would probably, if you're going to look at tone, it's anything from Web of Fear to Mind of Evil.
Basically, that actual serious military, almost proper mature tone. That's quite real world, yet very Who. You know, because I think after Mind of Evil, it sort of loses that.
It's that family thing, which is still great, but
obviously we can't do that. We're nowhere near that yet.
I think that's honestly the best approach because I do a bunch of fan Doctor Who films, and one of my big purviews for it is that, you know, we don't get too fanish with it. You know, we're not fans. We are fans making these films, but I don't want it to seem like we're fans making these films, kind of thing. Yeah. So I have very strict rules about how we use certain props or how we use certain dialogue. And certainly I don't want to see us repeating certain dialogue from the actual show like I see in so many fan films. So if you're going to do a book series like this, addressing things like that seems like you're just kind of, in a sense, the way it would come off to me is, well, one of the main things we wanted to do with our book series was address the time issue and correct that for everybody. And it doesn't seem like it's right because it doesn't seem like it's necessary.
No, it's a very hard line to walk.
Yes.
You've got to be very mindful of what you're doing. You've got to look at it as a professional series of books first.
I also think it takes the fun out of it, to be honest.
Part of being a fan is making it fit. So why we shouldn't do it for
And it's interesting because, you know, they're all over the place anyway. You look at the dating for Sarah Jane Adventures, and then, I don't know, if you just go to the New Adventures and look at the dating of No Future,
Well, by virtue of the Sarah Jane Adventures, that categorically, because she's born in 51 and she's 23 in Time Warrior, states that Time Warrior is 1974.
And that's
contradicted elsewhere, so it's, you know.
To be honest, I would rather go with Sarah Jane Adventures now.
Yeah,
because it's the most. It's been on TV and it's proper, and it's Sarah Jane, and she's proper.
Yeah.
So you know, and the Brigadier was in Sarah Jane. Brigadier wasn't in Doctor Who.
And speaking of proper ladies, Hannah's got to vanish in 10 minutes. So if there's anything you want to ask her, now is your time. Yeah. Get her while she's still here. Go on, drill her. Ask her loads of Doctor Who questions.
No,
go on.
I am curious, since you didn't have a backing in Doctor Who, you don't know, you said you didn't know much about it. Have you delved into it now since starting the book series?
Great question.
I watched The Web of Fear.
It's a start. That's a good start.
I have. I promised Andy I would watch it, and I have to say, I watched the whole series in one sitting.
Not the entire 50 years.
The last episodes of the DVD. Just sat and just watched all of it and absolutely loved it.
Have you watched the new Peter Capaldi?
Yes. I've watched 2 or 3 episodes of Peter Capaldi. Watched his first one.
What's the finale, of course.
And the finale. And I think I may have watched one in between. One of my 3 children is Doctor Who fan. The other 2, they're like, yeah, okay. It's Doctor Who. But it's a case, when I was growing up, it used to frighten me. And I didn't really know my grandfather's involvement within it until after he passed. We've got the picture of the Yeti that he took and things like that on location. And it was like, okay, yeah, you did that. But, I mean, within certain circles, he's seen as kind of being absolutely huge within Doctor Who. But to me, he was just granddad.
And, of course, Doctor Who is only a small piece of a very extensive CV for him. I think fans can often forget a little bit.
And, you know, without necessarily moving the subject on, we do have other work that we are looking to explore that is not connected to Doctor Who.
That Mervyn's done.
You know, because at Candy Jar, we're not just a Doctor Who publisher. Mm. We're not a Doctor Who publisher at all, because we do not publish Doctor Who.
We don't.
I must qualify that.
Because we're not allowed.
We have a license for Lethbridge Stewart.
And that's what we're doing.
Yes. Though we did publish the companions book, 50 Years of Doctor Who Assistance.
I've heard of that.
Written by Andy Frankham-Allen.
Oh, God, that was a long, long, long journey.
Any of you got that?
I've got it.
Hey, good one,
I've
Christian.
Got it.
I think that might be because you sent me it. I'm not sure.
I've read it, but I've got it.
But I would have had it either way because I tend to collect that kind of book. So, you know, it just cuts out the middleman of going to the shop and buying it, you know.
So
it's
Hannah,
a very good book.
Hannah, have you seen the story Invasion?
Oh.
We're getting on to my favourite person.
Yeah, your favourite.
No, I haven't.
No, you haven't.
No.
Maybe someone should recommend that to her later. I don't know.
Hannah, what is your nice opinion one on Derek Sherwood?
Oh, thank you, Sean. how can I answer this being really technical?
Diplomatically. He'd done your grandfather a really good deal because he made your grandfather's character a legend.
Exactly.
So well done, Derek.
Yeah, I have to thank him for that.
You didn't mean to, probably,
certain
but well done.
Interviews given have maybe bite my tongue. Sometimes I haven't I haven't put it out there what I really would like to say because I am very diplomatic. But Andy knows my feelings.
I do.
But I can't possibly comment.
No, I don't know. My grandfather didn't really get on with him. Put it that way.
What do you when you saw that he referred to your grandfather and Henry as a hack? What was your feeling on that?
In Doctor Who magazine last month.
Yeah. It was a case of knowing the bad feeling that there was. And reading the interview, it wasn't only towards Grandad and Henry that he was bitter. He seemed to be bitter about a lot of people. And he was bitter about people who weren't there to really stand up for themselves. So I don't know. I think it's more a case of he feels he's been very hard done by. But bitterness really doesn't suit a person. But what he ended up doing by bringing back the Brigadier did us all a great favour.
See, because
was that diplomatic? Because
you get a sense that he did it not necessarily despite your grandfather, but he certainly didn't consult.
No,
you know,
he wasn't consulted.
Which, as a producer, he would know they don't own the character. But nowadays, apparently, he thinks he created a character, which makes no sense at all. But by doing so, for whatever reason he did it, he actually just, you know, solidified your grandfather's vision in Doctor Who way more than The Web of Fear on its own maybe would have done.
Yeah.
So, you know, well done, Derek.
And especially when you look at the pre-recorded interviews on some of the DVDs, you can basically see the venom. He really did not like my grandfather. So for him to bring him back, it was like a double-edged sword, really. And
it's kind of, it's very telling that when they did Abominable Snowman, before it was even aired, unless I'm getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, they'd already commissioned The Web of Fear because they were so impressed with the scripts of it, they knew it was going to be a hit.
Yeah.
So,
and I think
it's obviously just a character clash, I guess, personality clash between Derek and
going over some tape interviews that my grandfather had done for kind of local arts societies and things. I think he'd said that they commissioned him for The Web of Fear within, I think, the first episode.
I know it's on record, a very, very quick turnaround.
However, without Derek Sherwin's input into Doctor Who,
there would be no unit,
that type of Doctor Who, and to some extent, that is the tone that we are going for in these books.
Because season 7, he set it up, but that's our tone.
We have to give him the
props for that.
Yeah. You know, without Derek Sherwin, we wouldn't have this, and we wouldn't have Brigadier, and we wouldn't have had John Pertwee, and we wouldn't have had all those things that makes Doctor Who the most fantastic programme it is today.
It is true. Derek, this is the problem. I think Derek, you know, he seems to misunderstand how big an impact he's actually had, and he should just take, you know, gratify that, you know, wow, that's a really good thing that I've done anyway, instead of being bitter about what never happened. You know, because what he did do was actually really good. You know, for those few months he was in that role, he did some great stuff, and he should take some pleasure from that. But instead, it seems like it's all,
hey, you know, the Time Lords, all those sort of things, they all happened under his
watch. That's what I'm saying. A lot of good stuff, and he should really take pleasure in knowing that he set this amazing thing up.
That's the last thing you'd think, that we'd be the ones defending him.
Yeah, you've got to look at it.
That's because both of you, you see him in obviously the Who way, and I see him from the point of
I hated him
way.
but he's very important to the history of Doctor Who, and
yes, he may have written and said a few things that he shouldn't have, but we shouldn't forget that he really
did play a
massive part in the series, and we should always thank him for that.
Yeah, you know, there's always a good and there's just bad, and you know, you get old and you misremember stuff and whatever.
All right, let's
okay.
Oh, it's exactly the same with Brian Terranova here, and I tend to go on record in various podcasts and I say the same things about Brian, and that he's done good things for the podcasts, I guess, but you know, he's a bit of a dick, really. I don't tell him this, he doesn't
preach
know
the truth, truth brother, just make me feel so good. I'm glad I come back every week, James. It was all for you. Okay.
Can I ask any of you three, is there anything that you'd like to see in the Brigadier, well, Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart series?
It's a good question, because we obviously need feedback, but at this point, until the books are out there, it's hard to get feedback. Yeah. So this is a good chance. What would you like to see, ideally?
I'm very tempted to say I'd like to see an adventure set in Chroma. I don't know why, but that would be a ridiculous thing.
He knows what it is, yeah.
But to be honest, it would just be an adventure set in Chroma.
Yeah.
I know, but that would make me happy. So that's worth doing, isn't it?
James, don't you live near Chroma? Going...
Yeah, once they're in Chroma, it'll be an adventure set in Chroma. It'll just be Broadchurch, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's even better. You can have a guest star.
We'll get Chris Chibnall to write that book. Nothing's impossible.
There's nothing wrong with Broadchurch. It's a fantastic show.
Good show, yeah.
Never watched it, but I've heard it's a good show.
I think possibly. I don't know. I'm very happy to be surprised by it, to be honest with you. I'm basically waiting to be surprised by it. So there better be surprises.
I think his relationships with the what become the established unit members is quite interesting, and maybe there's a broader approach to actually try and give unit more structure than it did ever have, or you know, the military anyway, more structure than it did have in the Pertwee era, where it was a bit.
We'll come back to that in a second. But first, Hannah's got to go.
Sorry, I've got to love you and leave you.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Hannah.
Yes, thanks so much.
We'll
speak
soon.
Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
So, given unit structure, and that's a tough one because obviously we can't use unit at the moment.
Right, yeah, of course, yeah.
No, but by the same token, we are still kind of building towards it, obviously.
And we do have a
hope that we will maybe one day get BBC. Yes, we have an alternative. We've got good plans.
I did caveat the question with military organisations having realised, as I put it, that it was the wrong continuity. But, I mean, the question still holds relevance in the sense that unit never really carried much establishment beyond the core members, while for the Brigadier, maybe it would have been nice, or the Colonel, to have a feeling of structure around him in whatever setup he's in, which was there, actually, in Web of Fear and Invasion, I think, a little more maybe than later.
It's happening. Within our series of books, there won't be unit, but there will be something which is exactly the same.
Yeah, only much more militant.
Militant?
Well, kind of. They're more black ops and less homespun, you know.
Right, I'm prepared to tell you, but off record. So when you're finished, right?
Yeah, we'll tell you when we've finished.
Okay. Okay. I was thinking you could call them the Great Britain Intelligence Task Force, and then it'd be called GIT.
GIT. We're using that gag already in David's story. Which apparently he's used in another book. Yeah. So we'll have to do it again. So, boom. We will have GIT versus somebody else.
Brian?
Nice. Yeah. Honestly, the main thing that I want to see you guys are already taking care of, which is his climb to becoming the Brigadier, because I did think, you know, it would be a little strange for him to have dealt with the Yeti and somebody to just say, hey, guess what? You're Brigadier now for that one. Good job.
That's,
you know,
that's basically what the books suggest, don't they? They suggest that straight after he went to the government, formed unit after Gilmore talked to him, apparently, and it happened just like that. You're like, there's a 4-year gap. And you watch Invasion, and clearly unit has not been around that long.
Right.
It still seems quite new, not too sure where it's at exactly. So, yeah, I don't think it happened overnight. No way.
But I do also have a second want, and it goes back to something you guys were saying a little earlier in the podcast, where you were saying that you really couldn't have the Brigadier run into, say, a Zygon or the Master. Yeah. And I get that. But generally, as a filmmaker and a storyteller in my own way, the things that I always look at are like, how could I tell a Master story without ruining continuity? And one of the things that I would really like to see personally is see the Master have a plot that maybe he's dealing with. What's that?
I've got two words in response to that. Stay tuned.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, then I'll stay quiet over here now. There's my thoughts for you.
Stay quiet and tuned, Brian.
Stay quiet and tuned. I will.
That's not trying to cut you off.
No,
that's all right. I'm interested to hear that, so that's cool.
Yeah, we do have plans.
Yeah, we've got plans for all kinds of crazy stuff. Some may not happen, but I think a lot of them probably will.
Yeah, well, that one probably will.
I think so, yeah. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Well, I think we'll... I know, Andy, you've listened to the podcast before. Sean, are you familiar with the podcast?
I've listened to it once before, yeah.
Okay. Was it last week?
The week before.
Okay.
That's funny enough.
What we do at the end of almost every podcast, apart from the ones where I don't attend, is do recommendations. That's right. So the three of us will offer a recommendation to our listeners and to you guys as well. And you're welcome to offer your own recommendations. I suspect I may have an idea what they might be.
Oh, really?
but I may not. You know, you might have something else up your sleeve. So to get us started this week, I would like to ask Brian for his recommendation, first of all.
For my recommendation? Okay, well, I guess I have two recommendations. I finally, because Netflix just got it, I finally got to watch Series 2 of Ripper Street. And I know you guys have recommended it before, and I know I'm behind the times, but it was a very, very good series. So I'm looking very much forward to Series 3. Bit of a wait for me, unfortunately, to do that. So no spoilers, please. That's just a great show. I love the storytelling. I love the way it's shot. Everything about it's just a beautiful show.
It was cancelled at one point.
That's right. Yeah, and there's Series 3 has just completed on Amazon. On Amazon Instant, which we've mentioned on previous podcasts. So I'm glad that Brian's catching up with Series 2.
I had to wait because we didn't have it here. You know, I was waiting for means that I could watch it. But there you go. Yes, it's good. I like it. I'm also going to say I decided to... I don't know. We spoke about this a few times on the podcast that while we enjoy Daniel Craig as Bond, his films aren't exactly the most inspiring ones, I guess. But I don't know. I've watched all three of them again, and I have to say they were a heck of a lot more enjoyable this time round than I remember them being in previous rounds. So I watched all three, and I have to say, honestly, I think Skyfall is probably the weakest one of the three. Which is weird because I ordinarily would have put Quantum of Solace there, but now I feel like Quantum of Solace is my favorite one.
I think Quantum of Solace is just a little bit flabby. I think that's the only problem with it. I think it just needs a bit of tightening up.
Yeah, well, I think the main problem for it was that since their original plan was to do a trilogy, it's very much a part two, which really needs the part three to finish it off, which we never got. But it really, I think... Story-wise, even though the story was weaker the villain's plot and so on, it is actually the one film that doesn't seem like it wastes screen time, where I can say that Casino Royale and Skyfall both have a lot of things going on, and then all of a sudden there's this point where the movie just drops off and gets really slow for a little bit before things pick up again. Quantum of Solace didn't do that, which is why I think I actually like that. It's actually, while it feels thinner, it's a bit tighter, actually, in my opinion, upon a rewatch. That's why I'm a little bit more behind it right now.
Isn't that like every Bond film ever? In a sense that they start off really exciting. There's a real boring bit in the middle, and it gets really good at the end.
I think you could argue there are a few like that, but I have to say, for instance, Tomorrow Never Dies. That one's my favorite one, and I feel that one was all go. But it's also it's notable that it's the shortest one, so it seems to me that they figured that out and they cut out some of the slower bits.
I think the slow bits in Tomorrow Never Dies, really, there's still something happening, isn't there? You know, there's probably two slow bits. There's the bit in the hotel room, and there's the bit in Michelle Yeoh's secret base. And even though they're slower than the action bits, there's still action going on. There's still a lot going on at the same time. To be honest with you, I probably think that is my favourite Bond film of the lot.
Yeah, same with me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm going to offer my recommendation. I'm just going to say one word, and then I'll say some more after that. My one word is Broadchurch Series 2. Which I know is not
nice.
Just one word, but I think he's got a super. I mean, it's kind of turning into Doctor Who with Eve Miles in there now as well. Doctor Who in Torchwood with David Tennant. Wouldn't it be great if David Tennant was in Torchwood?
Oh, good God. Although they were saying that they would never do that, didn't they? They would never put the Doctor in because it's too against who. It says so much about the show, really, doesn't it?
Without giving any of the plot away. Without giving any of the plot away at Broadchurch, I thought that the first episode of the series two, the way that they've actually managed to bring it back was extremely good.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. I mean, that's why I'm recommending it and why I'm going to continue watching the rest of it. Because, you know, with these kind of situations, you can watch it and say, is this how they're bringing it back? Oh, I don't think I want to waste my time watching this. But in this case, I think they've done it in exactly the right way to keep people watching and maybe even bring in new viewers, although that'll obviously spoil their enjoyment of the first series should they get to watch it. So that's my recommendation, Broadchurch. Who would like to go next?
Go on, James. What are you going to recommend? Surprise us all.
I'm going to recommend The Musketeers. Which is again having trouble again as it did last series ratings wise, but it is a very good show. Do watch it. Mark Warren, obviously from Love and Monsters for Doctor Who, takes over Peter Capaldi's position. Not quite as good. Peter Capaldi's Richelieu was a little more ambiguous. His patriotism to France was interesting, even though he was a very ruthless and manipulative character. Mark Warren's character is a little more Machiavellian, obvious, but still well played, still good show. Father Brown is back on daytimes, which is always a good, enjoyable watch. Yep, cash out on iPlayer. This week I am not going to recommend The Invasion because of, the conversations were, you know, about Derek Sherwin. How can I legitimately recommend it? Someone else might be able to, but I don't know if I can.
Okay, thank you, James. Guests, Andy and Sean, would you like to join in the recommendation game?
Okay, I would definitely join in. I will recommend, because I always do, Supernatural, which has just been commissioned for its 11th season, so that's always good news. Because, frankly, it's the best, you know, fantasy-type show on TV at the moment, bar none. So, yeah, I swear by it.
Mine's slightly left of field. I'm going to recommend...
Triton Rock.
Nope. Can't Arthur Strong.
Who?
It's a comedy on BBC One.
Okay.
I think it's every Wednesday or Thursday at 10:30 in England, 11 o'clock in Wales. And it's fantastic.
Okay.
He's a character who's made a migration from radio, isn't he?
He is, yeah. It was on BBC Two last year, and now it's on BBC One. And I watched the first episode, and it's one of those comedy series that when you were a kid, you were just on the floor, banging the floor, because it was so funny. And I did that this week, and I haven't done that for years.
You actually hit your
phone. I was like, oh, this is... I was dying because it was so funny. Yeah. Brilliant.
Excellent. That usually happens to me with Would I Lie to You?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, tears of laughter, anyway. I don't think I've hit the floor for a long time.
It's a Sean thing.
Right. Okay. Well, gentlemen, and in a kind of timey-wimey way, Hannah as well, thank you very much for joining us for the podcast this week.
That's cool.
We wish you the most fortune and success with the Colonel Lethbridge Stewart series, and I'm sure everyone listening does as well. I'm going to bring this week's podcast to a close. You can find all the details you need concerning Colonel Lethbridge Stewart in the show notes this week, dear listener, along with the recommendations and anything else clickable that we've discussed this week. And that's the end of the podcast. So until next time, it's goodbye from all of us.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Have you finished?
Oh, right, yeah. You can't hear me, can you? I'm sure about that. I don't know what's gone wrong there. Very, very wrong.